This month on the One Prez Pod, Surprised by Hope. It is both a book by N.T. Wright, which is our book club book for the month. If you'd like to know more about reading that book or joining in the conversation at the end of the month, just call the church office. But it is also at the core of what we believe as Christians. What is our hope in Jesus Christ? Our hope in what is happening on Good Friday, Easter Sunday, in His death and resurrection. This month, join me, Reverend Blackburn, as we have conversations with local religious leaders about what the hope in Christ means to them. Welcome. Hey there, everyone. It's Tasha Blackburn with the One Prez Pod, and I have a special guest with me today for our series on N.T. Wright's book, Surprised by Hope, which is all about the resurrection and Easter and what it means to be people of hope. And my special guest is Dee Dee Autry. Hello, Dee Dee.
Hello, Tasha. It's great to be here.
Dee Dee is coming, straight down B Street today. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you spend your days, and how you got here. Introduce yourself to us, Dee Dee.
Well, I'm Dee Dee Autry, and I am currently serving at First United Methodist Church, where I serve as the executive associate pastor. I wear a variety of hats in that role. I'm a Fort Smith native.
Really?
Yeah. And I was born and raised here. My husband is as well. We both graduated from Southside High School.
Oh.
We didn't date in high school, but we found each other about 10 years after we graduated. So we've been married 29 years with two daughters. Our children are in Denver. We moved them to Denver in August. And so we're really experiencing empty nest now. One of our daughters, our oldest daughter, Emily, is in seminary at Iliff School of Theology. And so she's following in mom's footsteps a little bit.
You know what they say about PKs, and I have two myself. They either end up in prison or seminary.
Exactly.
These were the choices your daughters had. Yes.
So she's pursuing that. And then our younger daughter is moved with her just to kind of figure out life.
Aww.
And so she has a job. She's got a job and a boyfriend. And so, but they're doing great. So it makes a lot better when you know they're thriving.
And how long have you served in churches?
So I have been an elder in the United Methodist Church for nearly 32 years. I went from my childhood bedroom to a dorm room to a seminary to a parsonage, literally.
As one should.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
This is all I've ever known.
Yeah.
And certainly I've had periods of time in my life where I thought maybe I needed to figure out something else, but God somehow always brought me back. So I've never ventured too far from it.
The notion of calling, right? We always say we have a calling, and that's such a good word for it, because it's like just when you think you might kind of leave, get called back.
Right.
You get a little nudge back or dragged.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and this last time, and the appointment I'm in now is really, I had taken a bit of a leave just to rest and renew and take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so this opportunity came kind of as just a really huge blessing, because it was a role in the church that I had often wanted and had leaned in to try several times and was ignored. And I mean, that's the truth. And so this just came as a real blessing to say, okay, all the things I've done and all the things I've learned and all the experience I bring matters. And I'm able to use that in helpful, beneficial ways for the church.
I'm so glad you're here for so many reasons.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here for Fort Smith. We need you. You've been here about 2 years, you said, in this call.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad you're here as a female.
Yeah,
there's not very many of us, Dee Dee.
There's not. There's
we
not.
We got a podcast together, see?
Yes.
Which is what we're doing.
That's right. That's
we got to stand together. We got a podcast
together.
Well, I called you to this meeting. I asked you, you know, hey, would you consider talking to me about, you know, some of the themes around Easter and one in particular today together? And it's something that, I don't know, maybe we have a kind of a mixed relationship with, is the idea and the belief statement we make that we believe in the resurrection of the body. And the life everlasting, right? That's how the Apostles' Creed goes, if it trips off our tongue. And we get that from Easter itself, which is coming up and we're all getting ready to celebrate it. We get that because Jesus's body was resurrected and he wasn't just this soul or spirit or, and it was recognizable in some way and yet not. I mean, there's all that kind of going on. And especially in the story of Thomas, because Thomas says, I'm not going to believe until he's resurrected, until I see his wounds, I touch his hand, you know. And so he does. Jesus doesn't even chastise him. Well, he does a little bit. But then he says, you know, touch. So this whole idea of resurrection of the body, I'm wondering, you know, what do you think, what has that done for you personally, and then how do you see it work out kind of in the community, the idea that bodies are resurrected, or what that means about Easter? What is something that we take in?
I think that first off, it's a powerful story to grab onto as the truth of Jesus, I think, in reference to all he said while he was in his short ministry, that it just makes it all become real to me, that what he proclaimed in his teaching and then what happened in that event, I think, solidifies for me that why wouldn't it have happened? Why wouldn't it be real? Why wouldn't those people that followed him and desperately adored all he did in that ministry and for them as people, why wouldn't he do something to resolve what he taught, I guess, in some ways? And I think for me, understanding that in the context of my faith and my walk with Jesus, that's really how Jesus has become real to me, is really through other people. So that sense of Jesus being resurrected and our lives being resurrected.
The whole embodied, right? So we use those words, embodied, in bodies, you meet Jesus.
Yes. And so all of my faith journey, my spiritual quest, in times of the dark nights of the soul, or even in those mountaintop moments, that the reality of Christ has come to me through other people. And so that him being a part of that and resurrected in that, in those lives and in that situation or that context, I think has made a huge difference in how I have come to know Christ and believe and sense Christ more than just spirit. More than just this big God-sized entity, but more of a personal relationship to that.
And that really is the kind of quote-unquote scandal of Christianity that begins all the way back at Christmas, that God would become flesh. I mean, that's the this is a big sticking point between Christians and Jewish people. You know, the idea that, I mean, they, it is so formative in the Old Testament. You are not even going to have a graven image of me, right? You're not even going to, you aren't going to try to draw me in any way, much less say I have a body. And we proclaim this really audacious thing that in some way God loves us enough, loves this world enough, loves bodies enough to take one. Be in one. It really is. It's kind of scandalous all the way through, and that God would then meet us in other people's bodies, right? Like not just in this mantra, spiritual, in the silence, kind of, which God can meet us in the silence, but would meet us in, it really is that, scandalous.
And I think that's how it moves from head to heart, which as a Methodist, that's where transformation is.
Was your heart strangely warmed?
Exactly.
That, we got to get the Methodist jokes in, right, or whatever. And I'm the frozen chosen, so see, here we go. Warm meets frozen.
Right.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
I think that that's, I mean, it's interesting you just talking about that sense of the body. I'm leading a little study right now where we're talking about how our body is so much about who we are as spiritual beings.
Yeah.
In that we eat and we breathe and we have blood flowing through us and, you know, we have cells and all this stuff. And so did Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that's then how we embody Christ in us. We recognize that this whole being we have is how we worship. It's how we respond.
Yeah.
It's how we live and be in the world as Christ's representatives.
Well, and I wonder if that is something, and you speak to me from your warmer tradition, to use I language, that is something my tradition could use reclaiming. We have a long, and you can even see it in parts of the New Testament, where sort of knowing is all that matters. Mm-hmm. A floating head, you know, is all that needs to be worried about. And body bad, body bad, body bad. It's soul good, soul good, body bad.
Right.
And I think, I don't think that's what Jesus is teaching. So if we really want to pare down to what we learn from him, he's not saying soul good, bad, body bad. Mm-hmm. There's something to reclaim there.
Right. Right.
About body good.
Absolutely.
Body good gift. Body good gift.
That's right.
Grunt.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how we see that. I wonder how we see that chasm lived out even today, where even if we aren't doing it, it's not here, like proactively we think it, but it's sitting there, this idea of, you know, spirit good, body bad. I wonder how, do you think we live out that chasm even today in ways?
I think it would certainly affect how we respond or how we act. Or if we acknowledge that this sense of body in what we may be feeling or experiencing or desiring. We can certainly label those things wrong or unnecessary or even sinful.
Yeah.
So, but I think that if we understand spirit and body together, that they're enmeshed. And, you know, I often say to people, if you feel that nudge or you feel that desire, don't you think that might be the spirit? Pushing you to something, that sometimes it has to be a physical sense and not just head knowledge or, oh, I should do this, but it's just sometimes we can't describe it, but we just live into it. And why wouldn't that be the spirit if we are open to that and if we're mindful of that and however our body responds?
Well, and I know you're making me think of, I remember a Rob Bell quote where he said, you know, we are given the gift. We are given the gift and the privilege of being human. Yeah. And what that means is we are neither we are neither just simply animal, right? Just simply sort of body and reactions, but neither are we angels, disembodied, no bodies. It's like we get to be this really great thing that is animal and spirit and body and spirit all together. And to deny the one is to say that being human is not a gift, you know, or whatever. And I've thought about that a lot because I was certainly raised basically to be an angel.
Of course.
Let's be frank. And it is how I'm raising my children. I mean, I'd like to pass that on.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I think we do a lot of like, especially with girls, it's like, be an angel, be an angel, be an angel, ignore your body. But this idea that, and so sometimes our bodies are just in the way.
Right.
we or they failed us, or we're upset about them.
They've been shamed.
Or they've been shamed. And to instead sort of say, wow, my body is a gift. And not only is it a gift, but it's doing everything it can to have me have abundant life here. And to, you know, every time it works, in any form, to say, that's a gift. And it's what Jesus carried. I mean, it's that idea of relating it back to God chose to take on one of these. And live in one of these. And I want to complain about my knees.
Exactly.
You know, and how does that, you know, where is our hope in that? Like our embodied hope of resurrection.
And I think that, to me, that's where it becomes real. In that it is embodied in all of every, I mean, again, as United Methodists, we believe that even before we know it, the Spirit is present within us.
Yeah.
And so, and if we're all, I say this a lot, if we're all God's creation, why would God not embrace every being with that Spirit? And of course, part of that is our coming into knowing it and coming into that an awareness and knowledge of it, and then professing a faith in that. So it's all a process. But why would God not? I mean, we're all His creation. And why would not, why would God, who adored and His Son to the extent of giving Him for us, continue to pour that same love out into all of us in some embodied fashion? So that we continue to carry forward the traits and the characteristics, the behaviors, all the things you think about what our body does. Why wouldn't God empower that to happen? Because God is God.
Well, and God looks at His creation and goes, that's good. I have to remind myself of that a lot. It's like, the creation is good. Your created body is good. It's part of Jesus's resurrection. We're told it's going to be part of our resurrection. That blows my mind. You know, can't really even go there fully sometimes, because it's like, I'm in depths that I can't go much further. But it is. We're promised that this is good. And so then how do we respond? Like, how do we live into the goodness?
And even reconciling, this just occurred to me, even reconciling death, especially death of a loved one. My father died about a year and a half ago, and he was always a strong, vibrant man, worked with his hands, didn't like to be idle. There wasn't anything he couldn't figure out how to do. So very, you know, a man who just lived to move. And that, but yet, what took his life diminished that, and took away his ability to feel no pain when walking, and you know, I mean, I just saw this body decline and become something I didn't recognize. But I knew my dad was still in there. And I knew all of that was still who he was. But and so sometimes it's hard to reconcile how all of that happens. And to see and to have, you know, still have vivid memories of how my father was in those final days and wondering why. And how did this happen? But yet recognizing that my dad had to move from one place to another. And maybe that's what we all do. We will all do.
But as in the big capital T transition. He didn't have to move from the living room to the dining room. He had to move from one place to another.
And he didn't necessarily need this anymore. Or he didn't need this. What this was for him in this life, but what was God giving him in the next? In that eternal life. And that's not for me to know yet. But I just have to think that all that my dad was in that is still that in his being.
Yeah, and it's all, it was integral to who he was, and so it will be integral in some form in the mystery,
right,
in the time to come. So, okay, so as we get ready for Easter, you know, pastors love it when we get close to Holy Week, we get a little deranged look in our eyes, but to step back for a moment, this isn't about the task to be done. When you think about Easter and what it means to be people of the resurrection, to be a person who lives in the light of resurrection, what does that mean to you? And is there a certain one of the Easter scriptures that you kind of always come back to? What are you thinking as we get closer and closer in this Lenten period to Easter?
I think, again, in the way we live and breathe in this world, we need these seasons and cycles of rest, renewal, reflection, and then opportunity to live into that. So we need these ebbs and flows of our life. And I think Lent kind of provides us that period of time where we can self-reflect and ponder, what is all of this? How far have I gotten away from what I claim, or what can I do to grow closer, or what do I need to get rid of?
Yeah.
What do I need to take on so that in this spiritual life, I'm growing deeper in understanding and growing deeper in my faith, to Jesus, who we claim as the utmost in our, you know, and understanding all that means. And I think we need those seasons. So for me, Easter then becomes this just moment of shedding the old and putting on the new, whatever that is in any season of your life, for my life, anybody's life. And how do we radiate in that? Because that, for me, that's what Easter, it just radiates a light that to me is almost bigger than the light we claim at Christmas and Epiphany.
Yeah.
It's a brighter light. It's a broader light. It's a deeper light. Mm-hmm. It's a light that's filled with such grace and forgiveness and mercy and renewal. I mean, it's all of those things. And so how then do I claim that to live these stories, I mean, scripture, that how do I live to claim the, for me, it's the women who find the empty tomb.
And it's in every gospel.
Yeah.
In every gospel.
Who then go and tell and share the message. And it's, for me too, it's the women who didn't doubt even beforehand.
Yeah.
They just chose to love and follow.
Yeah.
Not naively,
yeah.
Not without learning or experience or whatever, but they didn't fight against it.
Yeah.
And then when they experienced what they saw or didn't see, they went to tell. But I think probably the most powerful part of that, which I think probably is why I believe that the resurrection then is embodied in all of us, is simply their name being called, and they recognize the voice.
My sheep know my voice.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I know their name, and they know my voice. It
so
all
that's
gets
always been the
reenacted
most,
there.
Right.
Yeah,
that's always been for me the most powerful, and maybe just because I'm a female, and that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah,
but that for me, so then. Being able to hear your name called once again and recognizing, oh, yeah, there it is. It hasn't left me.
We're back to calling, right?
Right.
It comes back to calling. You know, he's calling your name, and he's calling you to this life, this different life, this renewed life. Well, I think about the women a lot to, of course, this time of year, especially think about the women. And I'm sure you've read in your commentaries, as well as I have, that, you know, it is fascinating, not only that, not just that they were the first to go to the tomb, that's its own thing, but someone had to write that down. Mm-hmm. And in the time, women weren't even allowed to give witness testimony in court because they were considered completely unreliable, and right. You would never call them to say if somebody had taken somebody's donkey,
right.
You know, because yeah. Unreliable. And yet it happened that way. And then the people who wrote the Gospels didn't change it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what is fascinating to me. They didn't try to, quote unquote, clean it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and to me, what that speaks of is what happened. I don't even need to prove to you that I have reliable testimony. You know, mm-hmm. Like, what happened is so earth-shattering, so life-changing. I don't need to impress you.
Right, right.
I don't need to tell you it was Peter. Mm-hmm. I don't need to tell you it was John, mm-hmm. You know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was the women.
Yep.
Deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just fascinating to me that the church, you know, the early Christians and then the church said, we're not going to make that, we're not going to clean that up. Mm-hmm. It's the women. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's risen.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that.
And so that, I think that's always just been important to me. And I know there have been times in my growing into my call and claiming that, you mm-hmm. know, certainly in my younger years of, surely God, you didn't need me to do this. but it's that reassurance that, yeah, God does, and God did call, and God had something for me to do mm-hmm. in this life as a female who oftentimes has been told, your word doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to have a too touchy-feely sense of Jesus.
Oh, that's nice. Are you too emotional, Dee Dee?
Yeah, exactly. I really wish you would just preach the gospel, because it doesn't seem like you are. All you seem to preach is why we should be different. Really? Really? I thought that's what the gospel was.
Yeah. Well, and even, yeah, I mean, the thing Jesus does, certainly in Matthew, not long after the resurrection, which we will celebrate, is that he gives the Great Commission.
Yep.
Go and tell.
Right.
Go and preach. There is a different life here. Mm-hmm. Like, that's exactly yeah. what, mm-hmm. Go be witnesses
yeah.
to what you've seen and learned, and that there's a whole different way to live.
Yeah.
That's part of the Easter right. message, too. Right. Like,
well, and for me, I guess for me, the culminating experience I had in recognizing that God really had called me to this life is really wrapped in the Emmaus story.
Mm-hmm.
And being a part of, I mean, in the United Methodist Church, we have Walk to Emmaus.
You have something called Walk to Emmaus, yeah.
You know, I was fortunate when I was in seminary, the church I was interning in, many in that congregation had gone mm-hmm. to this, and so I was doing youth ministry at the time, and a couple that were kind of my youth counselors, they said, we want to sponsor you to go. And so, you know, I'm a seminary student. Okay, it's a 4-day retreat. Okay, what? It can't hurt. You know, so I went, didn't know anything about it. But I did know that at that time in my life, I was really rubbing up against the ability to own and honor mm-hmm. the title Reverend. Because it just,
we could do a whole podcast on that, Dee Dee. Yeah. Yeah.
Wise enough or whatever, all those things. And even though I was in seminary and I was on the road toward that.
Yeah.
So I still hadn't reconciled all that in myself. And it was really in that weekend, because every day of that retreat, you have communion.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, and it was different every day. So it wasn't like I could, oh, now we're going to, I didn't know
yeah.
what we were having coming up next. And so I just remember that every time I would walk in the room, and it was going to be that time, I was just startled a little bit, but I was drawn to just the elements, the bread mm-hmm. and the cup. Mm-hmm. And So much so that I don't remember all the words that were being sang. I was just mesmerized by these two things. And it was really after my experience, as I put it all into perspective, mm-hmm. what it was God was demonstrating to me. On the very last day, when we went into the sanctuary, when all the community, other people mm-hmm. come and gather, and they, all of us who'd been on the retreat that weekend, they seated us in the choir loft of this particular church, and we all kind of filed in. And as I filed in, I wound up sitting, and this is no lie, right behind, on the front row of this choir loft, right behind the altar table. Mm-hmm. And literally when I sat down, that cup and that bread were like eye level, mm-hmm. the way it sat there. Mm-hmm. And there's hundreds of people out there, all up in here, all kinds of things going on. All I saw was that.
Yeah.
And I just kept saying, what are you trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. What does this mean? I've born and bred a United Methodist. I've taken communion more times than I could count. I mean,
yeah,
I just didn't know what you were trying to tell me. And so it was really that next week, as I kind of processed it all, when it just, and again, I'm in a near audible voice, mm-hmm. came to me and said, Dee Dee, it's not enough for you just to receive, but you're called to serve.
Wow.
And for me, that's all I needed.
Yeah.
It's all I needed.
Yeah.
Because I recognize the authority our church places on that.
Yeah.
And it's not something to be messed around with. And it's an honor to be given that authority. Mm-hmm. And so then the opportunity to share that and to serve that, mm-hmm. and all that means, because it's in that there's resurrection. Mm-hmm. It's in that there's transformation, healing, forgiveness, grace, mm-hmm. and everything is wrapped up in that. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, okay, then I can live into this that you called me to.
You literally lived out that passage when, you know, that's the whole story, mm-hmm. is they don't know it's Jesus until he breaks bread. And, right. and that's one of the big refrains of the Christian life, is you will know me in the breaking of the mm-hmm. bread. I mean, that literally mm-hmm. happened to you. You will know me in the breaking of the bread.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. A post-resurrection experience, yeah, exactly. in your own life, right? Yeah, to put it like in clinical terms. Right. But these moments are happening. Mm-hmm. Not just Easter 2,000 years mm-hmm. ago. Not just, you know, for somebody somewhere far off in another land yeah. a long time ago, but here, yeah. now.
Right.
Resurrection happens.
Yeah, yeah. And wow. I think that's why the church has instituted these things. Mm-hmm. For us, we call it means of grace. For mm-hmm. us to continually to revisit.
Exactly.
And experience and encounter Christ in new ways all the time. Mm. So.
Thank you for coming today. Thank you. Absolutely. This has been great, Dee Dee. I really appreciate it. And this is what we're going to kind of talk about all month long, is what resurrection means in our lives today. What happened then, and mm-hmm. and why does it matter now, and all the ways it matters.
Right.
So
right.
I really appreciate it.
That's fine.
Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you enjoy this podcast, go ahead and hit like in your podcast feed. It really helps. Until next time, peace.